Good evening, everyone. It's Tuesday, and it's time for Each for All, the Cooperative Connection here on Vancouver Cooperative Radio. This, of course, is your radio station, CFRO 100.5 FM in Vancouver, and you can always listen live online at co-op radio.org, coopradio.org. Tonight, our guest is Executive Director Michael Casey. He is the Executive Director of the Canadian Cooperative Association and the Cooperative Development Foundation of Canada, the CDF. And we're going to get him on the line here from Ottawa. It's going to be late for him, but we're really happy to have him on the show tonight to talk about all the cool stuff that these really interesting organizations have been doing for years that you probably haven't heard about, spreading cooperative development projects around the world. Michael has been the executive director of the CCA and the CDF since April 2015. He's also worked for 10 years with Development and Peace, the Canadian Catholic Organization for Development and Peace. He's worked in the Philippines, Vietnam, Indonesia, Thailand, Nepal, India, Sri Lanka, China, Zambia, Burundi, Ethiopia, Mexico, Brazil, Peru, Argentina, and Haiti. And he's also worked in Northern Canada. He's worked with Aboriginal and other community-based cooperatives in Inuit and Dene communities in Nunavut, and has held senior executive positions with the Northern Co-op Federation, Arctic Cooperatives Limited, and the Canadian Arctic Producers. So we're really happy to have Michael on the show this evening. Michael, thanks so much for joining us from Ottawa tonight.
Oh, it's great to have this opportunity. Thank you.
Well, yeah, just listing off the amazing places that you've worked, you are no stranger to international development here.
No, I've spent a good chunk of my life doing that in different countries around the world.
Well, I'm looking forward to getting a better sense of that over the next hour or so. One thing I'm also hoping to get a good sense of are these organizations that you're working with. We have the Cooperative Development Foundation of Canada, and its mission is to raise funds in support of cooperative and credit union development programming. And this is to reduce global poverty. This is from your vision statement. Or mission statement.
Yeah.
And then the Canadian Cooperative Association, which I know, you know, has gone through a bit of a transition over the last couple of years, and we'll get into that. But they deliver the projects on behalf of the CDF. Is that right?
Yes, that's correct. Yeah.
Okay. So that's interesting, just to sort of set that up. And I know we'll get into that in a little bit, this difference in these organizations. But I did find it's interesting to be talking with you now. It feels very, I was saying in that email, it feels very timely because of what's going on. We just had the International Day of Cooperatives on July 2nd, and we were hearing a lot of publicity about co-ops in international development. And I just wanted to read a quick excerpt from a news article. So this was about, this is actually from yesterday. And it was during the UN High-Level Political Forum on Sustainable Development in New York, the International Co-op Alliance, the ICA, acknowledged the UN's recognition of the power of cooperatives to achieve Sustainable Development Goals, or SDGs. The UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon, on the occasion of International Day of Co-ops, said, "I urge governments to create an enabling environment for cooperatives to thrive and grow. Let us harness the power of cooperatives to achieve the Sustainable Development Goals and create a world of dignity and opportunity for all." So I was wondering if you could tell us a bit about the Sustainable Development Goals and how co-ops can help.
Well, yes. I mean, this is a very good endorsement for us as cooperators all over the world. It's finally like we're coming into our moment of recognition and the importance of the co-op model and all of the good work that's been done all over the world through cooperatives. And now we're being recognized on the global stage in a much more prominent manner than we have before. And it's a direct result of those sustainable development goals that were signed by most of the countries in the world last September, including Canada, which was a very strong proponent of these. This followed up on, some people may remember, the Millennium Development Goals that were declared around the around 2000 at the turn of the century there. And they had a number of goals set out to be achieved within 15 years. So they came to fruition, so to speak, by 2015. And these were a number of goals to... It was engineered by the UN and some of the major international development agencies to look at ways that we could reduce global poverty and attack many of the issues of development still facing the world. And ambitiously, they set the targets for 15 years at the time, thinking, well, if you know, we put everything together, we could probably achieve it. There was significant progress made in many areas, like the incidence of global poverty was reduced dramatically in a number of countries, particularly in some of the more difficult situations. But we were a long ways off the mark from meeting the targets that governments had agreed to look at in terms of like gender equity, reduction of poverty, maternal health indicators, all of those kind of things. So about 10 years in, they started giving it a rethink to think, well, okay, perhaps we overshot a bit on the deadline trying to get this done in 15 years. And perhaps we have to look at some of these goals in a context that will look at sustainable development that we can reach, building on the successes of the Millennium Development Goals. And that's where the Sustainable Development Goals have now come in. And they were much more, or the Sustainable Development Goals are much more focused and much more based on the experience that had been had so far, looking at what had worked in a number of these key indicators. And they put them together in such a way that it got significant agreement and significant buy-in by participating governments and countries that were had participated in the Millennium Development Goals. But there seemed to be kind of like a new global energy building around these. And it has really received a lot of prominent support on a global basis, and more countries are tying their development goals or and their development assistance, or you know, the traditional foreign aid policies from the northern countries are tied directly into the Sustainable Development Goals. And Canada is a great example of this. When we signed the agreement in September, it became a major pillar in the in Canada's foreign policy that our government is now working towards implementing as we go along. So you can see from the announcements that were made, well, cooperatives certainly have a role in this. Those of us that have been involved in cooperative development and with cooperatives for any length of time still believe that the cooperative model is one of the most effective models for sustainable development at the community level. And we've worked for years through our different cooperative agencies promoting the model and seeing significant economic and social success globally in many, many communities and in many countries where the cooperatives have really given a boost to the local economies, to lifting people out of poverty, and with many of the other spillover effects, if you want to call them that, that are recognized through the use of the co-op model because of its basis on democratic participation. This has led to strengthening of civil society in many countries. And so it's a very effective model for overall sustainable development. And it was great to see Ban Ki-moon make his statement the other couple of weeks ago when there was International Co-op Day in recognition of this and the role that co-ops can play in the SDGs.
Well, it is very inspiring. And hearing Well, hearing this recognition for co-ops, I mean, we did hear quite a bit around 2012, which was the UN acknowledging the International Year of the Co-op. And now it just seems, the momentum is still around. What do you attribute it to right now? Or is it just that people are finally understanding co-ops or hearing about it more?
Well, we like to believe that. I think that the International Year of Co-ops did create an incredible buzz around the whole idea, because co-ops have been around for, you know, like 150 years already in one form or another. In most countries in the world, there is a cooperative sector that exists. And I guess just, you know, finally getting the successes of the model and the effective work that it does finally being showcased on a global scale. Like in 2012, when they did the international summit, well, that kind of event has been repeated in 2014. And now there's another one coming up in 2016 in October in Quebec. And it's been largely driven by the now president of the ICA, Monique Leroux, who was previously the head of the Desjardins Group before, and is now the first Canadian woman to be elected as president of the International Cooperative Alliance. And she has really, through her campaigns promoting cooperatives over the last several years, has really made a significant impact on raising the profile of the model and the system on a global stage.
That's pretty exciting. I mean, it's an exciting time to be a Canadian cooperator here.
Well, absolutely.
So the Sustainable Development Goals, are they approaching, you mentioned they're approaching it differently than the Millennium Development Goals. Have they set a time frame around them, or is this a recognition that we shouldn't apply time frames?
Well, no, there's goals generally have to have a time set in order to be effective. Otherwise, you know, you can kind of drift. So they've established what they called Agenda 2030. So they're looking at this for in the overall framework of the Sustainable Development Goals, that we'll be working towards these on an agenda for realizing them by 2030. Where the difference is from the Millennium Development Goals is many of them are much clearer, realizing some of the hurdles that we had to reach. For instance, like in the Millennium Development Goals, where they said they wanted to reduce overall global poverty by half. Well, close, but, you know, now it's more targeted in looking at specific instances of poverty and how we can reduce it, again, in half, but targeted specifically in difficult situations.
And so you mentioned key indicators earlier. Maybe you can just explain what key indicators are. I'm really not familiar.
Well, they've set up 17 goals. I can't recite them from memory, and I don't
have my that's quite all right.
But there's 17 development goals, and there's 179 targets inside those goals. So you can almost map it out. Like if you take sustainable development goal number 3, and there'll be 4 or 5 specific targets under that to look at. And so this is provided, as I was speaking, the element of focus in this, that you can actually look at a specific sub, you know, you have the main goal and then you've got the sub goals, the targets that are more fleshed out to see what can be done. And so it's going to be more trackable in terms of reporting and getting statistics on these efforts by the countries that have signed on.
And so that makes a lot of sense. I kind of start to see from some of the things you've said how co-ops can likely help these achieve these targets, achieving the goals. What does it look like for cooperative development? What does cooperative development look like for the projects that you are involved in?
Well, we use the model. I mean, the cooperative model that has been adopted since the invention of the concept and the refinements that have come into it ever since, based on the seven cooperative principles as a model of organization, which has consistently proven to be effective in the betterment of economic and social conditions for members of cooperatives and people that form and belong to them. So the seven principles have remained kind of the core and unifying element in cooperative movement all around the world. You can travel into any country and meet a group of people in a cooperative, and you share exactly the same principles and exactly the same values that you bring into your own co-op at home. You know, even if you're in a small primary or you're working at the national level or, at any level of the system. And it really is a shared community of practice around the globe. And I saw in the statistics that they had put out in the press release the other day that there's like 2.6 trillion U.S. dollars now in global revenues generated by co-ops, and there's more than 250 million jobs globally in the cooperative sector. It's becoming more and more and more of a very strong economic force in many of the countries. And here in Canada, we have an absolute world-class example, which is what has given rise to our work in being able to promote and assist with the promotion and development of co-ops in many other countries using our experience here in Canada.
And so I guess I'm also just trying to get a sense of when you do send people to countries that you deemed or figured out there's a project there that could use your assistance, what does it look like once boots hit the ground there? Are you working with already existing community organizations, or are people approaching you with a project that they'd like to get started? How does that unfold?
Well, if you go back to the historical roots of Canada's involvement in international cooperative development, it goes back to the late 1950s. The Cooperative Development Foundation itself was founded in 1947, so we're going to be 70 years old next year. Wow. And that came in just after the Second World War, as in the whole environment of the Marshall Plan and the reconstruction of Europe and everything like this, and they were looking at aid to Europe in doing reconstruction. Then in the post-war years, where there was all of the decolonization in many of the developing countries, people were looking at the cooperative model as countries and economies emerged out of colonialism and developing independence. And you have to remember, these were back in the Cold War days, where there were the two big systems between the capitalist West and the communist countries, and people were looking at different models about how the economies of nation states could work and elements that would make it successful. And Canada drew a lot of interest in that because of our history, because as part of the so-called New World, going back over 100 years, our experience with the development of our local economies in the challenges faced by Canadian geography and all of that, where you've had prairie farmers and Atlantic fishermen and all other types of situations that have developed a very strong and vibrant and prosperous community by following, maybe not always explicitly, but the cooperative principles of community working together, equitable distribution of the wealth. And we became a very good example for countries that were looking at these types of situations, where you had a large number of people in poverty and the need for economic, social, agricultural development. and the cooperative model became a very appealing one. So when they were looking at places, well, who can help us get this going? Well, Canadians had already had, about 60 or 70 years of experience in that, and signs of success. Our cooperative sector was doing very well. And so that's when the work that we started doing through CDF, through the Cooperative Development Foundation, in providing assistance to countries that were interested in our model and our story and our success, and replicating it and trying to do the same thing in their own countries. So the government looked at this as part of our foreign policy development when there was a lot of interest in what they used to call third world development. And cooperatives were able to establish a niche in that and started to work back in those days. A lot of it was in the formation of primary cooperatives, small credit unions, things like this. These have now grown over the years into much more sophisticated systems and larger networks, so that our projects now focus literally on all levels of the cooperative sector. We work in many developing countries working with local communities in actually forming primary co-ops. Oftentimes you'll get a group of like non-governmental organizations or local associations that people are interested in using the co-op model. So we can assist in doing that, like, organizing a community, developing a small, say, farmers cooperative or a small credit union or, women's businesses and things like this that we assist in, all the way up to now where we're working with organizations that have evolved, such as credit union centrals that provide all of the services of a federation to their cooperatives, that organizations that would be similar to what we see here in Canada with Cooperators Insurance as a national cooperative insurer, where we are able to work with their vis-a-vis in other countries. You see experiences we have with some of our large co-ops here, like the Federated Co-ops chain of retail and agricultural co-ops, United Farmers of Alberta, the fishing co-ops, grain marketing, all of that kind of stuff. And we're able to provide the benefit of our experience and our expertise as we have developed our systems to work with other co-ops in other countries in doing likewise.
It's pretty amazing. And this is, it sounds like this is essentially the co-op sector itself involved in this international development. It's quite remarkable. And you were saying earlier, the new sustainable development goals are this major pillar of the foreign policy for Canada now. It sounds like, co-ops have been kind of involved in this, these development goals, or at least in achieving some of these targets already for some time.
Well, that's what we among the believers believe, is that we're finally getting recognition for what we've been doing all these years, because it's becoming more, looked at more closely by governments and around the world. And it's essentially what we've been doing as cooperators since the birth of the movement and the work that has been happening in a number of countries. And so, I can speak very generally on this, but we're kind of excited to get this type of recognition for something that we've always believed, is that the cooperative model is, as I mentioned earlier, one of the most effective mechanisms for sustainable and equitable development. And it's because of its foundational values and principles, where it's based on the human being and not on capital, and it involves the participation of the members and the whole concept of equity and equality in there is very, very important for building stable and sustainable businesses and communities.
Mm-hmm. Well, I did want to dive into a bit about The Cooperative Development Foundation and its sort of structure, and also its relationship with the Canadian Co-op Association, which I know has undergone some very major changes over the last couple of years, I guess, as the sort of umbrella organization changed to be the English and Francophone umbrella organization of the Cooperatives and Mutuals of Canada, CMC. CCA continued, and maybe you can just kind of explain how this all came to be.
Okay, well, it was kind of a natural evolutionary process. The seeds of all of this were, in terms of the structure of the organizations, were planted back in 1947 with the creation of the Co-op Development Foundation that was set up to promote, as a charitable foundation, to promote the development of cooperatives initially internationally and here at home in Canada. And it grew from there. Then in the late 1950s, we started focusing a lot on international development projects as the co-op idea was being embraced in many countries, and the Canadian example was being held up as one that proved the effectiveness of the cooperative model as a development mechanism. And so it grew over the years. In 1987, the predecessor organization of CCA was called the Cooperative Union of Canada, and the Cooperative Development Foundation of Canada were kind of like parallel working together. And the Cooperative Union of Canada in 1987 merged with the co-op college that had been set up in Saskatchewan, and it became the Canadian Cooperative Association, which was, in co-op parlance, it was the apex organization of the cooperatives and credit unions in English Canada. So CCA, the Canadian Cooperative Association, did all of the functions of a national cooperative apex. And this was government representation, development of cooperatives in Canada, and it also had an international development wing in there that did the promotion and development of co-ops internationally. The structure at the time of CCA was focused exclusively on English Canada, and French Canada had a parallel structure that was involved primarily with French-speaking cooperatives in Quebec, New Brunswick, different parts of Canada. And there had been discussion for years going on about how the cooperative sector in Canada could have one unified voice. And so these discussions started taking place in the mid-2000s originally, looking at forming one national cooperative apex instead of having one for English Canada and one for French Canada. And over the course of years, consultations, discussions, dialogues, and everything, this led to the creation of Cooperatives and Mutuals Canada, which was a merger of the cooperatives in English Canada and the cooperatives in French Canada, creating a new apex organization that was pan-Canadian. So CCA, at the time of the creation of the Co-ops and Mutuals Canada as the new apex, became solely focused on the international development part. So that means the functions that CCA used to do in terms of representation with government, in terms of domestic cooperative development, cooperative education, things like this, all of these activities devolved to the new apex, CMC, and CCA became exclusively focused on international development and the promotion of the Canadian cooperative model abroad. So we work hand in hand, CDF and CCA, on this mission, and we're part of the Canadian cooperative network writ large. And CMC is our main, well, our only member of CCA. So it became, CCA was reincorporated as a cooperative with one member, and that member is CMC. So we have an institutional affiliation with the National Apex, but our focus is now exclusively on international development as opposed to the other functions that we used to do on a national level.
I have to say that is the clearest explanation of how Canada's cooperative apex organizations have evolved over the last, 75 years. That was pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Thank you. And I understand that the impetus to keep the CCA brand was really because of the positive name recognition it had around the world. Is that correct?
Well, definitely. I mean, we've been in the business, so to speak, since the late 1950s doing this. And, in all due modesty, we do have a very good track record at the work that we've done and have received international recognition in a number of areas for the work that we do in developing co-ops. And we've built long-term partnerships with cooperative organizations in many different countries that have, lasted over 25, 30 years, where we've continually worked with the growth and evolution of the cooperatives, both in our own country here, because we benefited from so much of the experience and innovation that is in the sector here in terms of technology and business practice and stuff, which we have shared as part of our mandate with other countries. And so it is, we have long-term partnerships with many cooperatives around the world. And so it's on the strength of, if you want to call it the CCA brand, that our recognition is there, even though technically we are no longer an association of cooperatives and we are no longer the Canadian Apex organization. We are an international development body that is closely linked with the cooperative sector. And CDF has continued on a parallel path all the way through that as a charitable organization that raises funds and promotes the development of cooperatives. So CDF is the major contributor of funds to CCA for many of the development projects. CDF also has a number, a small number of independent projects that it is supported here in Canada, but by and large, most of the funds that are raised by CDF are provided to CCA to support the international development projects.
And so who are the funders now? You mentioned, you're not dipping into a membership pool now, or probably, I guess CDF has never, but the CCA certainly. So who are the funders of the CDF and through it, the CCA?
Well, CDF receives very generous support from most of the major cooperative organizations in Canada, as well as a large number of individuals who are like monthly donors and make regular contributions. And these are people, they're like dyed-in-the-wool cooperators, I guess, people who have been in the co-op sector, many of whom who have had an international development experience as a volunteer on a CCA project or who have worked as what we used to call technical cooperants, where they've contributed specific technical skills in some of our projects. And so they've built a relationship with the international development projects. And so they've been touched by the experience and continue to be supporters and donors to us. So the funds being raised by CDF come from our corporate supporters, like the large cooperative organizations in Canada through different fundraising campaigns we have, and a large number of individual contributions. On the business side of this, CCA doing international development projects is like any other international development agency. We largely funded by Global Affairs Canada as part of Canada's foreign aid policy. We develop projects and we go to government for financing for them. And as they, get accepted, that's where we earn enough to cover our overheads. We're a not-for-profit, but we get financing for the different projects, and in there we're able to sustain our administrative infrastructure and things to keep these projects going. And we've had a continuous relationship with the Government of Canada for the funding of our international projects. It goes back into the 1960s when they created the Canadian International Development Agency. And on the basis of our work and their recognition of the importance of the cooperative model in achieving the international development goals of Canada's foreign aid program, we've been able to have that as a major source of funding for all of the different projects that we undertake around the world. We've also diversified a bit, and we've started working with other international organizations. We've done projects with organizations, UN agencies, the World Bank, the regional development banks, like we've worked with the Asian Development Bank, the Inter-Americas Development Bank, the African Development Bank. We've worked with international organizations like the International Fund for Agricultural Development, all of this doing projects involving cooperatives and cooperative organizations, with us providing the expertise and the technical contribution in partnership with local co-ops. So that's how we do our business of international development, through that. The core support coming from the contributions from Canadian cooperatives and cooperators, and the financing on the projects that we're able to obtain from external sources, government and other.
Yeah, that's really neat. I hadn't really put that connection together with getting the additional funds from, I guess it's CEDA, the Canadian International Development Agency, and other international orgs. The I mean, we talked a little bit at the beginning there about how co-ops seem to be in the forefront of a lot of people's minds, and we're hearing about the people looking to the co-op model more. But from the sounds of it, the government has recognized for quite some time that the cooperative development model is a good vehicle for international development. Is that fair to say?
Yes, that's fair to say. I mean, it's not always a slam dunk for us, because there are a number of competing methodologies, and there's never sufficient funds to do all the projects that we would like to do. And there have been policy orientations concerning foreign aid that have changed over different eras of government administration, where there has been in the whole field of development looking at different approaches, where there might be a promotion of a very strong private sector and trade orientation, that if, in terms of our development work with other countries, if we create economic relationships to facilitate trade between businesses and focus with a very strong element on private sector development, that, has at different times been very much the orientation. But we have always found that much of that is limiting in the development impact, because it is effective. You can build successful commercial relationships, but development has a whole human dimension and a broader aspect to it. And we find that the cooperative model combines the effectiveness of good business practice with a social mandate for the development of communities, individuals, and societies, that is much more holistic than a strict focus on commercial relationships. And so we still have to keep our voice out there advocating for this. And it's the essence of our approach in promoting the model. But, it doesn't always fall on sympathetic audiences in different quarters at different times. And so, we've we haven't succeeded in some of the projects that we've proposed for some of these reasons.
So I did want to actually talk a bit more about the human element. You brought it up there because we haven't really talked about some of the projects and the stuff that's kind of, really the on the ground work. And I'm curious to ask you about one specific project because my partner actually worked through CCA and the CDF funded project through an organization called SEND in Sierra Leone, setting up and doing research into setting up credit unions in that area. And I'm curious if you're familiar with that project enough to sort of speak to it. And I know right now you're going through some more funding for that project. And it's kind of an interesting project. I mean, it's a it is a war-torn area, extremely poor. I don't know if you're comfortable talking about that project or know enough about it to speak to it.
Well, I don't know enough about the specific details on it, but I do know the general context of it. And it's a situation where we feel that the cooperative model can be a very effective element in, as you made reference to, the human dimension there of developing communities and stabilizing the society. And part of that is the inclusiveness of the co-op model, where it works at the very basic community level, where it's people getting together to look for ways where they can determine their own destiny, where they can determine their own future of their business. They can organize it at a local level and have active participation that is based on the principle of one member, one vote. So the control structures of these business enterprises, no matter how small they are always in the hands of the members in an equitable and democratic way. So one of the spin-off benefits we've always found with the cooperative model is, even though its primary focus is on economic well-being and developing good businesses and things like that, through the governance aspect of it and the participation of members, this has been, in some cases, like almost a training ground for civil society actors. So people who have, for the first time in their life, have spoken up at a member meeting of their primary co-op or have been elected to a board of directors, who have worked their way up, say, to the next level of the federation of the cooperative movement or something like this, have often been recognized and have developed and been recognized for their leadership skills, which has sometimes transferred over into the local political sphere. So it's not uncommon to see people who have gone from being a member in a primary co-op and getting elected to a board of directors and getting that kind of governance experience, and then moving into the political sphere and maybe getting elected on a village council or a provincial council or becoming a mayor or, and in some cases even in federal politics. And so the whole participative democratic aspect of the co-op model also becomes a training ground or a formation place for strengthening democratic structures in the civil society. And you take back to Sierra Leone, you take war-torn situations of conflict where many of the civil society mechanisms have broken down and need to be reestablished. Well, the co-op model or in the co-op experience can contributing to the healing of the society and the more effective functioning of its institutions of government.
It's it is inspiring, and the stories that I've heard over the years of the impact that setting up a credit union in a very impoverished area can have in a community are pretty remarkable. I did want to also ask, what are the challenges that you can face in projects like this? I mean, you're kind of trying to assist from halfway around the world. What are some of the challenges?
Well, you've got all of the, logistics difficulties because you're working in very different environments, cross-culturally, all kinds of logistics constraints, poor non-existent telecommunications facilities, stuff like that. You know, there's still a lot of rough rows to hoe out there in developing situations, which is a challenge into itself. And we work very much on the principle of partnership with our partners in these other countries. And so there's the whole cross-cultural elements and understanding the subtleties of different cultures. And even though espousing the same general values and principles, the implementation is sometimes different in terms of cultural structures of hierarchy, authority, you know, community governance, things like this. And so it requires an understanding on all sides about these differences, that it's, you know, we work together as partners, not as, you know, donors and recipients, but we work together in this sharing the common bond of co-op development. And then in many of the situations that we deal with, you've really got a lot of systemic constraints that really penalize and shut out and marginalize the poor, of which there are many. And so many of the economic structures are dominated by elites, like local elites or multinational interests and things. And so it's really, in many cases, David and Goliath situations where people in communities are looking to gain control of their own economic destiny by forming their own organizations. But they're up against pretty big odds in many of the areas. Credit unions are a good example, because one of the major constraints that poor people have is access to capital to develop any kind of business or even banking facilities and stuff like this. So the whole question of money and its management and its use is major, and large swaths of society are completely locked out of that system. They can't get a bank account. They can't, you know, there's no facility for providing any kind of credit. And so the co-op model works in that way by enabling people in a community to pool their resources together, work together, and they can overcome some of these barriers and constraints.
It's a pretty amazing work, I have to say. I'm just kind of blown away that you guys are doing this around the world, and that it's funded by cooperators in Canada here. It's pretty remarkable. I'm afraid we've come to the end of our time. I've got a lot more questions, but we're going to have to wrap it up here. I did want to give people an idea of how they could get involved or donate. What would be the best way to do that?
Well, we've got all of our media. Like, the best way to get introduced is probably to visit our websites, either on CDF or CCA.
So that's CDF Canada, all one word, .coop, or
yes.
coopscanada.coop for the CCA.
Correct, yes.
And yeah, you can go there and find out more about projects. Also, find out ways to volunteer and find out ways to donate. So that's cdfcanada.coop and coopscanada.coop for the CCA side of things. Yeah, thanks so much, Michael. I really appreciate you staying up so late there in Ottawa and sharing this amazing story with our listeners. It's
well, thank you for the opportunity. I mean, it's always a pleasure to speak about our work and among the believers, as I always say.
Well, I'm just blown away at the impact of this organization, and I really appreciate you sharing its history with us. There was so much in that I was not aware of. So that's wonderful. I'm going to let you go and get some sleep. We've been talking with Michael Casey. He's the Executive Director of the Canadian Cooperative Association and the Cooperative Development Foundation of Canada. Have a good night, Michael.
Thank you, Robin. Okay, good night.
Bye-bye. And yeah, if you want to find out more information about either organization, they're kind of one, kind of like Co-op Radio, actually, and our charitable arm, CREST, the Community Radio Education Society. CDF is cdfcanada.coop. Co-ops, Canada.coop is the CCA. You can find out information about their projects, their programs, and how you can volunteer, how you can support them. I'm really considering becoming a monthly sustainer because it sounds like that would be quite useful. Our guest tonight, as I said, is Michael Casey. Thanks a lot, Michael, for joining us this evening. And that's it for us here on Each for All, the Cooperative Connection. I've been your host, Robin Puga. If you need to reach us, you can tweet us at Each for All or check out our website, eachforall.coop. Thanks for listening and have a cooperative evening.